First committee to order. Let the record reflect, the time is 1:05 PM. Today is Monday, March 22nd, 2010. Today we have my friend Representative Wilson, Representative Olson, Tuck, Seaton, and Edgman so far, and myself, Representative Newman. We do have a quorum present. Today we're going to have House Bill 414 by the House Resources Committee on the separating oil and gas production tax, and House Bill 74 by Representative Jewell on coastal zone management. The plan today is to introduce House Bill 414 and ask that you hold questions till the next hearing, where we're going to have some time and members of the administration and industry on hand to answer that. We've got a version A on that before us. It's the same as the original A version introduced in the other body. So we're going to continue work on that one. So just briefly, I'm going to have my staff go through a sectional analysis on House Bill 414. You should have copies of that. And again, then we'll turn our attention to House Bill 74 with Representative Jewell. We'd like to introduce my staff, Rex Shattuck, to do a brief introduction. Rex?
My name is Rex Shattuck, staff to Representative Mark Newman. The comments today will be addressed to House Bill 414-26LS1592-A. If you look in your package, you'll find an analysis of SB 305A. You'll find that those are both basically the same. Currently, there are a number of companies doing business in Alaska that have both oil and gas from the North Slope, have both oil and sales from the North Slope and gas sales from Cook Inlet and elsewhere. The gas produced receives the same progressivity surcharge as the oil. House Bill 414 by the House Resources Committee separates oil and natural gas for purposes of calculating the progressivity portion of the production tax under AS 4355. Under this bill, the progressivity surcharge is calculated on oil only instead of on oil and gas combined. The progressivity surcharge remains unchanged at 0.4% per dollar of production tax value over 30 per barrel, then 0.1% per dollar of production tax value over $92.50 under House Bill 414. Natural gas will be taxed at 25% of production tax value with no progressivity surcharge. We'll be looking at the A version and briefly going through the sections just to give you a quick analysis.
And Rex, excuse me, I'd like to note that Representative Johnson, Co-Chair Johnson, is also here. Go ahead, Rex. And Representative Kawasaki.
Through the chair, Section A, excuse me, Section 1, AS 4355-011-E2 is what we're addressing, adds language that specifically identifies the production of oil for progressivity rate purposes. Section 2, AS 4355-011, Section G, the language referring to gas and its per BTU equivalent is removed to isolate the progressivity rate tax calculation for oil. Likewise, in G1, the language referring to gas and its per BTU equivalent is removed to apply the progressivity rate calculation only to oil with a progressivity rate of an additional 0.4% for each dollar above $30 up to $92.50 per barrel. Section G2, the same changes are made as in the subsection, in this subsection as in AS G1, eliminating references to gas and per BTU equivalents to calculate the progressivity rate for net production values greater than $92.50 at the rate of an additional 0.1%. Section 3, AS 4355-011J, in comparing the lower of Section E tax and ELF tax for Cook Inlet production, progressivity does not apply for gas. Section 4, AS 43-0110, is the same as Section 3 for non-Cook Inlet gas used in state. and Section 5 for AS 4355020A1, the monthly installment payment for gas does not include a progressivity component. And Section 6, AS 4355160A2, the monthly production tax values for deriving progressivity apply only to oil. A applies only to the North Slope oil, and B applies only to outside Cook Inlet, not North Slope oil. Section 7, AS 4355160C, calculating the monthly share of the producer's costs of transportation for the calendar year for deriving production tax value for progressivity is for oil only. And Section 6 makes it immediately, or Section 8 makes it immediately effective. And as the chair said, we'll have next time around a number of people to go further in depth into the questions.
Thank you, Mr. Shattuck. And again, questions from the committee, feel free to come on in and talk to us about this, or members, Senator Stedman's office on the other side is working on this one, and we will try to do what we can, and we will try and provide information that you need as you need it. So go ahead, take a look at that. If you're going to want to require certain charts and stuff, we're going to have quite a bit of information on this, and we'll have a lot of information coming. Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hope that both the administration, Department of Revenue, will be here as long as
I can guarantee that they'll have lots of folks here, Representative Kawasaki. And if you have any specific people that you would like to have here, let me know, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the purpose of introducing this now is so that we can have it in the queue. There has been discussion whether or not this is even needed. If it is, we'll need to act quickly. And instead of waiting a week for notice, we wanted to get it in front of the committee so that if it does become urgent, that it could become a priority and we don't have to wait for the noticing period. So primarily this is a technical introduction so that we can bring it up in our bills previously heard. It is our intention to let everyone know when and where and be very upfront. We're not going to do any our late night meetings or any of that. If we do, everyone will know about it. But if this becomes a priority and something that is deemed as important, then we want to be able to take the Senate version, move it into finance, and not just have one committee, and the Resources Committee is the proper place for this to be. So that's why we introduced this, was so that we could be in preparation if in fact it's deemed necessary to even do. So we will be up front. We will have everyone who's interested. But when we move, we'll need to move quickly, and that's the purpose of introducing it today.
And again, also to make sure that we allow the public to participate in this, and we can get a lot of that done here in the Resource Committee so that they know what's going on, you know, in AGEA with the open season coming for us from TransCanada. One of the inducements to that is a lock-in in taxes for up to 10 years. And obviously it's pertinent that the people of Alaska and the legislature knows the effects of that and the values of oil and gas. Right now we're at differentials of close to 20-1. So again, trying to make sure that people know exactly what we're getting into here and that everybody is aware of that. And with that,
just a quick
we're
question.
Trying to get Representative Edgman.
Yes, just a quick follow-up question to the statement by Co-Chair Johnson. Is there going to be a definitive sort of answer to whether we're going to need this bill or not sometime during the session?
Representative Edgman, we are currently working on that again with members of the Department of Law, Revenue, and to try and find those answers right now.
Mr. Chairman, and
Representative Johnson,
if I might, Representative Edgman, I hope the answer is yes, there's the definitive. Okay. I don't want to go down a path and spend a lot of time on something we don't need to do, but if we do need to do it, we need to do it quickly. And so I'm not convinced that at this point there's a need to do anything.
Certainly.
Work through it. We will find out.
Right. Let's get the information out, and then we'll know.
Okay,
and we'll decide on that. And we'll decide, too, as a legislature. That's our authority. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In Section 2 in the handout, the bill change, where it's talking about midway down, calculation only to oil with a progressive rate for an additional 4 tenths for each barrel above $30 up to $92.50, is that meant to keep the current tax the way it is, or is this incorporating the change that was presented to the committee last time where it was a progressivity but only on each barrel it says each barrel above $30, but and profit.
Representative Seaton, this is a mobile document right now. It's a moving document. Things are changing fast on this. We're trying to get that information. We'll get those numbers exactly to you, and so, you know, I'd like to again hold questions as to the specific bill and where we're going on this for today.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, I was just putting the question out so that it could be addressed.
We'll have that. Mr. Chairman, if I might.
Representative Johnson.
Yeah, and no one on this committee, to my knowledge, has had any input to this bill. This is a bill that was drafted on the other body, and we just picked it up and introduced it as a placeholder. I haven't even looked at that portion of it yet. I like it, of course, but I haven't looked at that. So just so everyone knows, there has not been any input from anyone on this committee or in this body, as far as I know, as to this document. There'll probably be, as it morphs, there'll be a CS that may or may not include this stuff. But once again, you know, I don't think we need to spend a lot of time on this. This is introduced as a placeholder so that we can hear it under bills previously heard, adopt a CS as we need to, and make any changes that we see fit. But at this point, there hasn't been a lot of discussion in this body about this bill at all. So I wouldn't be concerned about it, Representative Seaton.
Yeah.
Tell
us
time.
My staff.
Then I'd be real concerned.
Representative John, my staff and I are diligently working to understand this and working with the other body to make sure that we've got the information. We have a pretty good handle on this as it is right now, I think, understanding it. With that, we will set this aside for now. And welcome Representative Jewell for House Bill 74. House Bill 74 is a coastal zone management. There's a lot of different things. It's House Bill 74. I believe we have version /S, which is a CS for House Bill 74, Community and Regional Affairs. An act relating to the Alaska Coastal Management Program and establishing the Alaska Coastal Policy Board, version S. Is that correct, Representative Jewell?
That is correct.
Thank you. Go ahead, Representative Jewell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the Committee of House Resources, Representative Reggie Jewell, House District 40 for the record. At this point, I will ask the committee to indulge me in having Elizabeth Hensley just give a very brief kind of a overview, kind of reminder where this is at, and then I believe we have some people online for public testimony. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would ask Elizabeth.
Ms. Hensley? Okay.
Thank you.
Why does that name sound familiar somehow?
Yes, for the record, my name is Elizabeth Stegula Hensley, and I will be providing a brief overview of HB 74. This bill is 18 pages, 36 sections, and it seeks to amend the Alaska Coastal Zone Management Program. Here's a little bit of history about the program. The ACMP was created pursuant to the 1972 Federal Coastal Zone Management Act. The intent of the Coastal Zone Management Act is, among other things, I quote, to preserve, protect, develop, and where possible, to restore or enhance the resources of the nation's coastal zone for this and succeeding generations. To encourage the participation and cooperation of the public, state and local governments, as well as of the federal agencies. To provide for the coordination and simplification of procedures in order to ensure expedited governmental decision making for the management of coastal resources. And to give opportunities for public and local government participation in coastal management decision making. In 1977, the Alaska Legislature enacted the Alaska Coastal Management Act, which created the ACMP. The program was federally approved in 1979, and originally a 17-member board oversaw the program, but in 2003, as many of you know, with HB 191, the Murkowski administration concentrated all decision-making authority in DNR. So this bill has three primary objectives. The first is to establish the Alaska Coastal Policy Board, and it would be a 9-member board, 5 of which are governor-appointed members of the public, and then 4 commissioners of the state resource agencies, so the Department of Natural Resources, the Department of Environmental Conservation, the Department of Fish and Game, and the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. And this board would be responsible for approving district coastal plans, grant programs, and regulations. Establishing the Coastal Policy Board will front load, or excuse me, I will say here that DNR will retain day-to-day management of all ACMP matters, and unlike in the pre-2003 times, will retain responsibility for project consistency reviews. So second, the purpose of this bill is to streamline the ACMP consistency determination process and to promote interagency cooperation and issue resolution. And to that end, it brings the DEC, Department of Environmental Conservation, back into the review process. After 2003, they were separated. They call that the DEC carve-out. And thirdly, this bill aims to restore the role of coastal districts by allowing them to establish local enforceable policies that are meaningful, and by empowering the coastal districts by giving them this input but not giving them veto power of any over anything. This bill hopes to recognize that local people have local knowledge that is of importance when looking at coastal resource uses. And with that, I guess we could move along as you wish, Co-Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Henley. And I'm going to ask Representative Jewell, and I will recognize, too, that we have Representative Chenault. Big issue for him, too, of realizing what's going on here, watching in on the meeting. Representative Jewell, we've got several people that would like to testify in this in public testimony. Do you think it'd be better to do some public testimony to make sure we get time for all those people to have adequate time to speak, or go to you to questions first? Or
I think it would be good to hear from the folks who are here to provide public testimony, Mr. Chair.
So go to Mayor Edda and such as some of the mayors around the communities first, then we'll come back to you for questions, and so folks can, if they've got questions for those peoples too. It's hard for them to, obviously difficult, you know, to try and communicate with the meetings here in Juneau and what we're trying to do. We're got a pretty busy schedule and resources this year, so thank you for that flexibility, Representative Jewell. With that, we will start with Mayor Itta, North Slope Borough. Mayor Itta, are you available?
This is Mayor Edward Itta. Can you hear me?
Yes, Mayor.
Okay. I thank you, Mr. Chairman, Chairman Newman and Chairman Johnson, for this opportunity to speak with you on this very important bill for us up here. I'd also like to thank and acknowledge Representative Jewell and his staff for the support and the help they have given us. And also to, just before I get into my testimony, that I hope you have copies of the PowerPoint information that I had produced here some time back in relation to House Bill 74. And I'm not going to follow that document in my brief comments, but I do hope you have it. I'm going to refer to a couple or two pages occasionally here as we go along. My testimony will be a summarization of the PowerPoint information that's before you. So again, thank you, Chairman Newman, Johnson, committee members, and hello to our listening public also. Again, I thank you for the opportunity to speak to a subject that means a lot to coastal communities throughout the state, not just in the North Slope. And I believe it applies to all Alaskans who want to see orderly and efficient development in our coastal areas. Mr. Chairman, I believe that there is a lot of confusion and misconceptions about the effects of House Bill 74 if it isn't enacted. First of all, I think it needs to be said that the Alaska Coastal Management Program is not a permitting program, and it is, in fact, a coordinating program. It doesn't create new obstacles to slow down development projects, but it does establish a process for resolving conflicts between project applicants, agencies, and local districts before these conflicts can possibly gum up the works, if you will. It is designated It is designed to streamline the participation of all stakeholders by getting them to work together early in the process. I want to refer to the PowerPoint, page 2, on what House Bill 74, my testimony, will address. Hopefully, and Mr. Chair, I would ask that I'm going to be open to questions, comments, concerns after my brief testimony. But largely, my testimony is in what will explain better why the North Slope Borough supports this bill, how this House Bill 74 does not stop development, and talk a little bit about how the ACMP is broken. A little bit briefly on why should the legislature care, and how House Bill 74 promotes responsible development, and lastly, why a meaningful role for coastal districts makes sense for Alaska. I want to emphasize briefly on what it is that this bill does and does not do. This bill does not simply reinstate the way things were before 2003, when the program was essentially gutted. It does restore a local voice in the process through local enforceable policies and a coastal policy council. That is all that I have ever really asked for, and that is to, again, local enforceable policies and a coastal policy council that would decide disputes instead of a single individual. What it does not do is allow citizens or third-party lawsuits. And I agree that this was a sore point in the old process. It also does not enable local concerns to trump or override legislative or agency authority. I think that's very important to note. So I believe House Bill 74 strikes a middle ground between the pre-2003 arrangement and the current approach, which unfortunately effectively shuts out meaningful local involvement. And I use this as a case in point of other municipalities within the state that desire to have local input and do not, this effectively shuts us out from that process up here. I want you to know how this legislation relates to a big issue that we have up here in the North Slope, how it relates to the local debate that we're having up here over offshore development in the Arctic Ocean. A lot of you know that I am not a big fan of OCS drilling. I don't ever deny that. But I also recognize that we are a development borough. And I recognize that outer continental shelf development in all likelihood is probably going to happen. So rather than fight it, I would prefer to work with industry, agencies, the executive branch of the state of Alaska, and the legislative branch to make sure that this project is done with world-class care. Recently, I have had some success in convincing my fellow whalers that we don't have to file lawsuits in order to get some accommodation and recognition of some of our biggest concerns. And I can point to the progress that we've made with Shell on a variety of concerns. I can also point to progress that we've made with the Minerals Management Service, which wrote some of our concerns into Shell's exploration permit for the summer's Beaufort Sea activity, a first and a big one for us up here. Unfortunately, I can't point to any progress in our effort to regain a meaningful local voice in the coastal management process. People remember that process and the influence it allowed them to have on local projects without stopping development. Our residents up here on the North Slope remember how coastal zone management used to work at the local level and they know, we know, that that has been taken away. Excuse me. What frustrates me the most is that by watering down the coastal management program so that there is virtually no local voice, I believe that the state of Alaska has effectively abandoned its opportunity to exercise influence in coastal waters. I want to say that again. I believe that the state has effectively abandoned its opportunity to exercise influence in coastal waters. We have handed over all the cards to the feds, to the federal government. And in the absence of a credible state program, local people such as our borough would look for a substitute chance for recognition of local concerns. I think all of us know, certainly I'm concerned about this, that national environmental groups will probably be jumping all over this vacuum that I believe has been caused by the state's inaction. A credible state plan could help to dampen the resistance that environmental groups are encouraging. It's a tool the state can use to the benefit of all parties, and yet we've seen no movement from the state of Alaska toward a solution. I believe very strongly in local control. I believe, as a lot of you do, that the state of Alaska must control its own destiny and not allow another federal program to overtake and override the good things that we have done here in the state of Alaska. The question I keep asking myself is this: what are my options if the state does nothing? I suppose we could rewrite Title 19 of our own municipal code and create new permitting hoops for the project applicants to come through. Or maybe we could work with the federal agencies and legislators on the concept of an Arctic Regional Citizens Advisory Council. Also very topical now on the federal level is President Obama's White House Council on Oceans about marine spatial planning. That's an issue that I am sure is going to have an effect on us, certainly up here in the North Slope and our coast, but certainly for the rest of the state of Alaska. I want it clear that I don't believe the federal solution is a good alternative. I believe we're all better off with a state program that recognizes local people as stakeholders and takes local concerns seriously. But I have to support something. As North Slope Borough Mayor, doing nothing is not an option for me. I believe that doing nothing would simply fan the flames of resistance at a time when I believe I have convinced a significant number of whalers and others among our people as Inupiaq Eskimos up here on the North Slope that we can also work with the state of Alaska, just like we've been making headways with the federal agencies and the oil companies. People like us on the front lines of development and proposed developments have unique concerns and insights. I believe that House Bill 74 reestablishes and refines a mechanism that can give them a voice without stalling the process. And before I close, I'd ask you to flip your PowerPoint to page number 11, which shows 25 years of growth up here in the North Slope under the Alaska Coastal Management Program. On the left, on the top, it shows what it was, Prudhoe Bay, in 1977. And in 2001, you can see how much development has been allowed and permitted up here in the North Slope successfully without any project being stopped that I am aware of. And I want to emphasize that this was a program that gave us local voice and development still happened. But I do believe that efforts to strike a balance that recognize and mitigate the concerns of the North Slope Inupiaits who have lived along the coast for thousands of years is a small consideration in light of the billions of dollars that keep being talked about here. And our desires to have development done in a meaningful and responsible way. Thank you for giving me this time, Chairman Newman and Johnson and members of the committee. And I do have staff, one down there, Tom Lohman, along with our legislative liaison, and also staff here if you have any questions, comments, or concerns.
Thank you, Mayor. And, Mayor, I do appreciate the opportunity and the offer to work with the legislature and the department in this. And Representative Jewell and I have had many discussions about how we can try and work together to solve some of these problems. I know that we've talked to each other at least a half a dozen times just all through last summer, too, and trying to bring people together on this one. It's a big issue. We also do have... for committee members, Randy Bates, who is the director for Alaska Coastal Management, and will be following up after public testimony. And we will have Lindsay Walter from the Department of Law. And for the public, we have loaded the same package that the committee members have. So we, Marietta, that it is available public for everybody, the whole package, including yours, comments, and your great slideshow that you've got here with your comments. That is loaded up on BASIS in one large document, and if you have trouble getting into that or understanding that, contact Representative Jewell or Johnston or myself or your local legislative information offices, and we can help you get there. Any questions for Mayetta or comments by Representative Jewell? Representative Tuck? Representative Tuck, Mayetta, we do have some questions for you. Representative Tuck?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, Mayor, if you would look on page 10 of your slideshow presentation, you have there that we have potential of acquiring coastal impact assistance programs funds. So this is additional money that if we had a properly managed coastal program that we'd be able to bring into the state of Alaska. Is that correct? Mayor, can you hear us?
Sorry. Yes, that's correct.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Either Mayor Ed or Representative Jewell, can you talk about those funds or how they will bring them in or what's the source of that?
Sure. This is Elizabeth Hensley speaking.
Ms. Hensley?
Thank you. I've got a document here that was prepared actually by DCOM, Randy Bates, I believe. It says the amount of money that comes into the state through the Coastal Impact Assistance Program, and maybe... when Randy Bates is up later, maybe he can talk about if I don't do this totally, clearly, and accurately. But for 2010, there was a total of 14 million, just over about $14.5 million coming into, allocated directly to coastal districts, coastal political subdivisions, as they're technically called here. That was the high end of projected 2010 money, so kind of a significant amount directly to them. And then there was money also allocated directly to the state, which was the high end there was about $27 million. And okay. Some of this money, as I understand it, is some goes directly to the coastal political subdivisions, some directly to the state, and then some of that goes through a grant program to individual entities that apply for the funding. I can provide you with a copy of this.
Thank you. Ms. Hensley, is that document in our packets, or did that come complete with the packet, or maybe you can provide that to us as we go move along?
Yes, I can.
Through the process. Okay. That way the members can have that. Ms. Hensley, is that money available? Do you know? I'm sorry to Representative Etta here. And I'll get to you on that question later. I'll make sure we address Representative Etta or Mayor Etta first, and I'll come back on that one. Any questions for Mayor Etta? Thank you, Mayor. And please stay online. I'm sure that you will. I know we've got your representatives here. We've got a couple of them that I know fairly regularly and see around quite often. And they come visit us, and Representative Jewell. So, and then if you're available for questions, we'll have you. So we have no more questions for you, Mayor. And we do have Representative Guttenberg here, so we have full committee. Thank you, Representative Guttenberg. Ms. Hensley, with those monies that for Coastal Zone and management of Coastal Zone, we've also got a program that deals with soil and water conservation districts that do water sampling for contaminants and things like that. Their funding has been cut. But the unique part about them is they bring in 8 or 9 to 1 for every dollar that they get in matches, which is very good. I mean, I sure wish we could all make $8 or $9 in every dollar that we spend. And what it does too is it also involves a lot of youth for Youth Corps for Coastal Zone or for management programs, water and soil management programs. Could they apply, or could that get funding in through this program? Because this it gets a tremendous amount of money here. We're talking, you know, $500,000 to $700,000 to keep this statewide through the program. Representative Jewell, do you know about that?
I'm not sure. That's probably a question best answered by Randy Bates.
Okay, and then we'll work on that one again. Okay, next we're going to go to Mayor Cottle, City of Valdez. Bert, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I just want to thank Chairman Newman, Chairman Johnson, committee members for this time to speak on House Bill 74. The City of Valdez supports the passage of House Bill 74. House Bill 74 corrects part of the damage that was done in the 2003 changes. House Bill 74 puts coastal communities back at the table with policymakers. Before the 2003 changes, the City of Valdez had 41 enforceable policies to which comment
Mayor?
On and input could be made.
Mayor?
Yes.
Can you please restate your name and affiliation for our clerk?
Sure. My name is Bert Cottle. I'm the mayor of the City of Valdez.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Bert. Go ahead.
Okay. And I'll just start on that last sentence. Before the 2003 changes, the City of Valdez had 41 enforceable policies under which comment and input could be made. Today, that number is 14. House Bill 74 would change that. The City of Valdez supports Section 37 of the bill, which eliminates the DEC carve-out. DEC needs to be back at the table and not be a standalone policymaker. Also, Section 37 would eliminate the requirement for coastal districts to update their plan every 10 years. If a plan is current, there is no reason to update that plan. Updating is costly and time-consuming. Section 1 of the bill also establishes a small coastal policy board, to which we feel would be a good. The old 17-member board was just too large to be effective. A smaller board would only address Alaska coastal management policy issues, and the new board would not be able to override any agency's authority. And I want to thank everybody for this opportunity, but the City of Valdez supports the passage of House Bill 74.
Mayor, we do have a question from Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I had a question, and that was you talked about Section 37, I believe, and I'm just trying to find out if I'm on the wrong version here. I only go through 36. Was that a misstatement or misunderstanding on my part?
The number they give me was Section 37, sir.
Okay. You don't happen to have that in front of you where you can read me what the section refers to, do you?
No, I don't.
Okay.
But I can contact you afterwards.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Any more questions for Mayor Cottle? Thank you, Mayor. Next we have Tom Oklisik from Northwest Arctic Borough.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, Tom, please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Yes, good afternoon, co-chairs and members of the committee. Kwiana, for this opportunity to provide testimony on House Bill 74. Uvunga Atiga Ukulesak. My name is Ukulesak, or Tom Oklisik. I'm the planning director for the Northwest Arctic Borough in Kotzebue. The borough supports House Bill 74, and our planning commission, jointly with the North Slope Borough Planning Commission via Resolution JBPC 0901, also supports House Bill 74, and we encourage the committee to adopt it. I would also like to recognize the wise testimony given by North Slope Borough Mayor Itta. In testimony, I'd like to talk about why does our borough support this bill. We have three basic reasons. The first reason is this bill updates the ACMP to a modern coastal management program where good governance is valued through public involvement. As background, under our borough strategic plan, one of our key objectives is to increase public participation for an interactive and engaging borough democracy. Our mayor, assembly, and planning commission value hearing from our lifelong Alaska residents, communities, and businesses in order to make the best governing decisions, policies, and good public relations. Under the current ACMP, participation of stakeholders was identified as a key weakness through the final evaluation findings. That document is dated October 2002 through August 2007 and was conducted by NOAA's Office of Ocean and Coastal Resource Management. On page 6, paragraph 4 of the evaluation report, the elimination of the Coastal Policy Council was noted to be controversial, particularly with transferring its authority solely to state staff. As you all know, checks and balances are a fundamental premise of our U.S. democracy as created by our founding fathers. And the Coastal Policy Board that would be reinstated by House Bill 74 promotes that modern governance checks and balance so that bureaucrats in Juneau aren't disconnected from our Alaskan communities and then forcing those decisions upon us as Alaskans. The second reason we support this bill is it'll bring balance into the bureaucratic decision-making process for coastal management issues. As you may know, the borough has been attempting to revise our coastal management plan since 2005, and we still have not received approval to date due to state staff interpretations of the law and regulations. We have met all the deadlines. We have made many special efforts to meet bureaucratic demands. We've also attempted mediation with the state, which ended in impasse despite the financial expense and the many hours and days of time that we invested into that process. As of right now, our borough has been waiting for over a year for the state DNR commissioner to make a decision. But if you look inside the statutes and regulations, there's no timelines for a response. And so we appear to be left hanging in a catch-22 bureaucracy. This was a terrible and expensive experience for any community to be forced through, and the legislature needs to make changes so that Alaskan communities can successfully work with our own state government. As you can see, House Bill 74 is a much-needed change that will bring more balance to these important decisions and promote responsible resource and community development, especially by the Alaska residents most impacted. We need to value the ACMP program and give it the legislative tools to work and to respect all Alaskans. The third reason we support this bill is we'll assist in advancing communication between DNR and local communities. The creation of the Coastal Policy Board will help ensure that coastal districts and the state agencies work together on resource and community development. Right now, the project developers, private companies, and coastal districts are in reactive roles, with state agencies overruling any decision throughout the process. This was illustrated recently with the Kodiak-Kenai Cable Company project to bring broadband access to the Arctic, including Kotzebue. Due to our coastal management plan not being approved, the borough as a coastal district had to make any request for information during the public review process for the applicant. In addition, the company was not made aware of areas in our coastal district that are important to ongoing subsistence activities. This caused many frustrations as the state DNR had to review all communication and decide what action to take. And that slowed down the project development, and the information from our coastal management plan was not made available by DNR for review by the parties until the public notice step. If our coastal management plan was approved, instead of being caught in the current Catch-22 bureaucracy with no foreseeable timelines for resolution, that company would know our designated areas and policies to build into their plans from the start of their planning. The coastal district could have then worked proactively and coordinated more closely with the company for meeting Alaskans' current use of the coast and sea with an expedited public review process. As you can see, this bill is needed to assist in advancing communication in a closely coordinated fashion. In conclusion, the Northwest Arctic Borough supports this bill as it brings good public practices into the coastal management program. Teiku for the opportunity to provide testimony.
Thank you. Thank you, Tom, Mr. Oklisik. You had mentioned the coastal management plan that you have spent considerable time and money to develop, and that it's not been approved, or comments back of why or why not it hasn't been approved, I think is what I heard. Can you kind of just give me a brief summary of why you think it may or may not have been approved, or does it change significantly the way things are done now, or I'm trying to get a better handle on that?
You know, I've been trying to get a good handle on that since my first day on the job here, too. We have been sent in 20 different directions, and even when we follow the direction that comes back to us, no, it's not approvable. And then it doesn't make sense because we say, well, you did what you told us. Well, the mind's been changed. And so, and then to any appeals process, it goes back to the state staff, and they have the sole discretion. So we have no effective way to get an appeal for a third party to say, okay, state of Alaska, you're not on track here. And coastal community, you're on track. There's no process for that. And that's been the extremely frustrating part of the program.
Thank you, Mr. Oklisik. What I was trying to get to, you said you were going in 20 different directions. Can you give me one issue that you think seems to be the most controversial or the least resistance by the department to approve?
Gosh, there's been so much resistance. I don't know if there's any one single thing. I know that we have our subsistence policies and designated areas, and out of our subsistence policy, one area was approved. And if you've ever been to Kotzebue, you'll see fish racks and meat drying racks right in front of people's homes and antlers all over the place. And it seems to be crazy that we only have one small subsistence area approved in the whole borough.
Thank you, Mr. Oklisik, and thanks to Representative Jewell. I have had the opportunity to visit Kotzebue. Any other questions for Mr. Oklisik? Thank you, Tom. Next, we're going to go to Carol Klo-Meenan. Carol Klo-Meenan from Aleutians West. Carol, are you available?
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. I don't believe she's here to testify.
Okay, Ms. Hensley.
Yeah, thank you. I don't believe she's planning to testify.
Okay. Carol Klo-Meenan is not testifying today. Marlene Campbell from the City and Borough of Sitka.
Yes, This is Marlene.
Thank you, Marlene. Please state your name and affiliation.
Hello, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Marlene Campbell. I'm the Coastal Management Coordinator for the Sitka Coastal Program, among several other things. And I have the Assembly of the City and Borough of Sitka has approved Resolution 2009-32 supporting House Bill 74 to enable Alaska's coastal communities to more effectively participate in the Alaska Coastal Management Program. And the resolution reaffirms the position of the City and Borough of Sitka and the community of Sitka, I believe, ever since House Bill 191 was initiated. Prior to the ACMP revisions, the Sitka Coastal Management Program had been a model of effective coastal management, allowing the Sitka community to have due deference and protect local resources and activities, while at the same time permitting responsible development. As a result of the revision process and forced complete revision of Sitka's coastal plan, Sitka lost more than half of its enforceable policies, the only section of the coastal plan which had standing to be considered as part of the ACMP for permit management decisions. Those policies remaining are so restricted as to be virtually unusable in coastal comments. HB 74 will restore the opportunity for a seat at the table in management decision-making affecting the coastal zone of City and Borough of Sitka by establishing reasonably sized Alaska Coastal Policy Board that will participate in district management plan approvals, which is desperately needed. I think the previous speaker pointed that out, permitting reinstatement of locally generated enforceable policies. And as I say, ours are almost gutted at present. The board will not be involved with consistency review process. I see it as a greatly improved and streamlined board, but one that's very necessary for checks and balances. The legislation will streamline project reviews through the inclusion of air and water quality issues and the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation in the review process, rather than having DEC function separately through the, quote, DEC carve-out, which has been totally dysfunctional from my point of view. Removing air and water quality from the purview of the ACMP was, in my opinion, a grave error. In addition, the legislation will maintain its legislative authority over the ACMP program and maintain its ability to pass future ACMP legislation. House Bill 191 was sold as a means of streamlining the ACMP. In fact, these regulatory changes crippled the program and disabled local participation, and we in Sitka are great examples of that loss that the whole community has felt. The proposed legislation will restore due deference to coastal communities with approved programs where consistent with state and federal laws, but would not slow down permitting because all the parties will have a seat at the table at the same time to resolve conflicts and expedite permitting. I've been Coastal Management Coordinator for the City and Borough of Sitka since 1987. Well, I have lots more to say. I would like to thank all of you on the committee for hearing this legislation, and I believe it is a great step forward to reinstate some of the very best features of the Alaska Coastal Management Program. Just one last point that did not make it in the current legislation, but certainly is a problem for us, is designation. They are extremely problematic to coastal districts because we're no longer permitted to have enforceable policies that relate to resources without designating specific areas. Well, in many cases, the resources that the policies relate to may move from area to area, just as the previous speaker was talking about. I hope that designations can be made more flexible in promulgating policies as long as a thorough analysis and justification for this specific policy is provided, and it has no conflicts with state or federal law. Thank you very much for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you, Ms. Campbell. And Representative Guttenberg has a question, but I do want to make sure we do a little bit of housekeeping here. On April 15th of 2009, we did close public testimony on House Bill 74 and held the bill over. I just want to make sure that we're clear that today's testimony, that public testimony has been opened back up to make sure that the members or these mayors from these certain communities' testimony does count and goes into the record as public testimony. So public testimony has been opened back up on that to make make sure we get that housekeeping done. And thank you, staff, for the notes. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Campbell, in 03, we carved out DEC from the management processing, the process. Has your city, has Sitka talked about that, reviewing whether or not DEC is an appropriate agency to be involved and to be put back into the involvement in this process?
Yes, that was part of the Assembly's resolution that specifically supported the reuniting, I guess, of the DEC department in the consistency review process, rather than, quote, carving out their participation totally separately from the ACMP. At the local level, to not be able to speak or even consider air and water quality issues when making coastal management decisions that so directly relate to the air and water quality issues of the coastal zone is just counterintuitive. It's not productive, and there is actually no real capability from a practical standpoint of communicating with DEC. They are carved out of the program. They are not a participant. And we used to have a very productive relationship with DEC and miss that communication and opportunity to interact in the process.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Campbell. Any more questions for Ms. Campbell? Hearing and seeing none. We do have Randy Bates to come on up. I believe that's all we have for public testimony at the time. Is there any more online or in the audience? Okay, hearing and seeing none. For the time being, we will close public testimony on that, and which we may reopen again, possibly. Representative Jewell, would you have to, any comments you'd like to talk about here? Looks like you're bailing out. Okay, Randy Bates. And then I do have some questions for you, Representative Jewell. I'm sure you'll be around.
Good afternoon. Randy Bates, Director of the Division of Coastal and Ocean Management. I'm here to answer questions at the committee's wish.
Randy, the administration has issues, I guess, for lack of a better term, with this bill. Could you kind of go through what you are highlight some of the areas in the bill that you have concerns? I guess maybe that's a better word, is concerns that you have with this bill.
Sure. Co-Chairman Newman, Co-Chair Johnson, members of the committee, those that testify, it is a pleasure to once again be with you this year. I appreciate Representative Kawasaki. I notice you open the window. It seems like whenever I testify, the heat is always up in these rooms, so much appreciated.
Thank you, Randy, and generally when Randy and I talk, my office gets a few degrees warmer, too.
Three or four, as I remember. The department continues to have significant concerns with the drafting of this bill and the substance of this bill. And while we certainly recognize the passionate testimony from those that have provided it today as well as April 15th of last year, the issues that we raised last year both in the Community and Regional Affairs Committee as well as here have not yet been addressed. It relates specifically to the authority and purview of coastal district enforceable policies as it relates to state and federal laws, the relationship that is expected to exist between coastal management and the laws that you and our U.S. Legislators have established.
On that point, Director Bates, so I guess I'm just going to try and make sure, is the authority of the board again, do you feel that there's some legal questions there that we have, or there's statutory requirements, or maybe that there's the state is giving away authority? Is that, I think, what we're talking about?
Co-Chair Newman, the basic question is irrelevant, in my opinion, as to whether it's DNR making the decisions on enforceable policies or a coastal policy board. The questions that we're concerned with are specific to the authority of coastal district enforceable policies. As an example, and this is something that the North Slope Borough Northwest Arctic Borough and the department have engaged for quite a while in is the authority of coastal district policies. One example that one of the districts wanted was the ability to manage or write an enforceable policy related to noise-producing operations. In other words, they wanted to write a policy that maybe limited noise-producing operations to less than 125 decibels. And that was intended to address the impact on marine mammals. There's two issues here. Number one, the Marine Mammal Protection Act specifically preempts states from developing laws like that. It is a duplication of authority in the Marine Mammal Protection Act precludes that. Number two, our own granting agency, Office of Ocean and Coastal Resource Management within NOAA, has said that while that may be an approvable policy generically or generally if it relates to just noise, we could not implement it. It would be illegal to implement it at the project review level. So from our perspective, from the department's perspective, there are significant legal concerns with the structure of these enforceable policies, what's proposed within the House Bill 74, and ultimately the relationship of those policies with the state authorities. We need to address that before we can move on with any meaningful crafting of statutes that would affect coastal management.
Representative Wilson and then Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Randy, we as a committee don't have a clue what the concerns were from the other committee. Mm-hmm. And so when you come and tell me that none of your concerns were addressed, I think I would like you to be a little more specific and in the bill tell me what parts of the bill have to be changed to meet your concerns.
Okay. Representative Wilson, through the chair. I don't remember, honestly, if I testified before this committee last year when we held this bill. I think I was there to answer questions. Let me restate what I've said before, at least in the other committees, and make sure that you understand the department's substantive concerns. Number one, this bill creates a new oversight body, the Coastal Policy Board, and vests that body with the ability to approve enforceable policies that would override agency authority, effectively rendering the legislative establishment of laws relative to resource management and protection moot. Number two, it is a bill specific to the issues of a group of ACMP participants, but it is not a bill that balances or represents the interests of all ACMP participants and stakeholders. Representative Wilson, there was a second part that I have misplaced in my mind. Could you re-ask the question, the other question you already asked, please?
Representative Wilson, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Can I interrupt? You asked specific provisions within the bill.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative. And is there, if you can, just list a section?
I'll do it very quickly, but it, again, while there may be specific sections that relate to this, it is a general overall fundamental issue that we have to resolve, which is the relationship between enforceable policies and the existing state and federal laws. Regardless of whether a coastal policy board is established, whether additional authority or purview is included in the statutes for district enforceable policies, it's irrelevant, in our opinion, until we address the relationship between these laws. Can a district enforceable policy be more stringent than a law that this body has established?
Mr. Chairman?
Okay.
We have an answer. I'm sorry.
We have Representative Wilson and Representative Guttenberg. Did you have questions? And then Edgman?
Well, just on that.
On that point?
Well, I had a question that.
Go ahead, Representative Edgman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to follow up on Representative Wilson's question. So I think I hear her saying, and certainly what I hear, is a sense of conciliation, at least, on the representatives we've had from the coastal areas of the state, including the mayor of North Slope Borough. What I hear from the department is zero conciliation. I hear a hardline response that no. You know, this bill is a non-starter. There's substantive issues with authority and purview of state and federal laws. I mean, you know, is there any middle ground or is there any attempt by the state to try to work with their constituent base out in the coastal areas of the state, or is this just all a flat, you know, we don't work in this issue? Mr. Kocher, to the testifier, if I could, please.
Mr. Bates, do you have comments on that? And I know that we have discussed this one before.
Yes. Representative Edgman, through the chair. From the department's perspective, this bill has significant concerns. In the various forms that it's taken and the various conversations we've had at this point, this bill will not work the way it's structured. We have significant concerns with the way it would work. We are very concerned with the ongoing discussions and the concerns that continue to be raised related to coastal management. We absolutely want to resolve those issues, and we're committed to working with participants, stakeholders, to try and address these issues and resolve. We are working on regulatory fixes that are going to resolve certain issues, some of which were partially addressed within this bill. And we will continue to look at the relationship between those state and federal laws and what they mean to coastal district laws. But again, it's not that we have such a hard line against any changes to coastal management. It's there's a fundamental issue we have to resolve before we can move forward, in our opinion, with any other discussion on changes to coastal management. So it's our desire to address that.
I'd like to come back to that. I'll yield the floor to whoever was up before me.
Yeah, we have Representative Kalasaki had a question and Representative Wilson.
This is Representative Wilson's question, though, is that we still haven't heard what the current concerns the department has and some of the fundamental changes that need to be made in this bill in order for the department to say that it's a good bill. Mm-hmm. So I kind of want him to go through, if he could just go through
some
of
the... I think that's Representative Kalasaki. I think that's the intent of the chair here, too. And we've got a lot of questions of Mr. Bates, but I think maybe a good place to start is with Representative Jewell to go through the bill with us, maybe through a sectional here, too, if we can. That way we've got a good idea of what the bill does, and it might help us in our questioning of Mr. Bates and how we go through that.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gettenberg.
Thank you. Mr. Bates said something, and as a rhetorical question, but I think before we start, I think it demands an answer, and he's the person that's actually incapable of answering it, if I may. Can district enforceable policies supersede state or federal law? I mean, you pose that as a hypothetical question, but you're the manager of this program. So.
And Representative Guttenberg, we have Lindsay Wohler from the Department of Law. Maybe that would be the person to ask.
Whoever can give us the correct answer.
But we're getting there, members. Ms. Walter, are you available?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes. Did you hear Representative Guttenberg's questions, or would you like him to restate them?
I think I understand it. I think the question is, how do we resolve this fundamental issue of what enforceable policies can or cannot do in terms of state and federal authorities that currently exist?
I think, Ms. Walter, I don't think that was the question. I think it was whether state supersedes local. Representative Guttenberg, can you restate your question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's whether the district enforceable policies can supersede state or federal law.
Yes, through the chair. That, I think, is the fundamental question that we have to answer, and I'm not prepared to answer that question today. This has been something that has been ongoing for several years, at least, I think, at least the few years that I've worked with the Coastal Management Program. And it's been something we've been seeking advice from. Randy mentioned the OCRM, which is the Federal Oversight Authority for the Coastal Management Program. We've asked them the same kind of question and haven't gotten a specific answer from them. We're trying to answer it within my office, but I haven't really gotten the okay to go forward and use our client's money to answer that question. So I'm not able to answer that. I'm sorry to everybody's satisfaction today. It's just a very complicated issue. And so that simple, it sounds like a simple question, but it's very complicated to answer. And I think when we talk about specific examples of enforceable policies, in some scenarios, they really do intrude upon state or federal authorities that have been specifically granted by either the state legislature or federal Congress. And I think it's the department's position that they don't want the authority to, they don't want us to be in the position of trying to approve enforceable policies that maybe don't comply or jive with state or federal authorities currently. You know, and I think Mr. Bates gave an example of that earlier.
Thank you. And if you'll just stay online, Ms. Walter, I believe we have questions from Representative Wilson, then Guttenberg, Seaton, and Edgman, and Tug.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have one question, and as the bill reads now, can you address what you think the bill reads, that it wants to supersede the state law and federal law?
Sure. Through the chair. Sorry, I just hit the microphone with my paper. We look at let me find it.
And while she's looking for that, members, in Section 14, it discusses preemption, which Representative Guttenberg asked about, and I believe it says no. So, Representative Guttenberg, for those members who had that question there, we'll have the
Mr.
Representative
Chairman,
Jewell kind of go through that.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask Aunt Randy a question while she's looking? I wanted to follow up on my question.
Representative Wilson has a question for Randy Bates.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Randy, you've been trying to work with the stakeholders and whatnot. How many meetings have you had to get together and try to work these things out? I mean, have there been how many? Like two, one, ten?
Representative Wilson, through the chair. These changes were brought about in 2003, House Bill 191. And what that mandated was that every coastal district revise their district plans according to the statutes and the regulations that we had to also rewrite. So we've been working with the coastal districts since that point to help them develop coastal district plan revisions. There were 33 coastal districts with plans. Five voluntarily dropped out. They felt that the existing state laws and their own local code and ordinance were probably going to take care of the concerns they had. That left 28 coastal districts to revise their plans. 25 of them have done that, and they did that in a timely manner back in 2007, 2008. There's one district that doesn't have a plan, but they're working towards it, and then we have the North Slope and the Northwest who pursued mediation. Both of those entities voluntarily declared impasse with the state. After we had exhausted our mediation opportunities, they declared impasse, and so their plans remain unapproved at this point. During that time of mediation, we made, from the department's perspective, significant movement on plan revisions. There were a lot of pieces that we had agreed to in terms of enforceable policies, information, and areas that they could designate, but there were still some outstanding issues that were very critical, obviously, to those districts that they felt impasse was their only recourse, that they couldn't move forward with a plan that they wanted in total. So those meetings occurred. There were several meetings, weekly if not daily meetings, for those two districts. We have reinstituted monthly meetings with what we call our working group, which is representatives from the coastal regions and all of our state agencies. We have monthly meetings specifically with the coastal districts. We're certainly in the business of trying to reconstitute some of the lost communication that occurred over the course of the last few years. We're trying to rebuild the relationship and the trust with our important participants. So it's in the hundreds. The opportunities that we've engaged or offered in terms of discussion is in the hundreds in terms of meetings and telephone calls and conferences. Obviously, there is still some frustration on the district's parts because the statutes aren't being changed to accommodate a broader opportunity for district policies, and that remains the substantial sticking point.
One more thing.
Follow-up, Representative Wilson. Now we've got quite a few questions here from other member.
Randy, if before we have our next meeting, if we could have what are the specific sticking points so that we have an idea of what we're what can't be agreed on, because we really don't know at this point. And so if you could let us know what those specific things are, and so we can see how they're addressed in this bill, and get the department's side of the story, and so that we've got both sides as we try to decide what to do.
Representative Wilson, through the chair, co-chair, is it okay if I respond?
Thank you, Mr. Bates. And then
we wanted to answer that.
I'll yield. Absolutely.
Okay. Okay. Did we have questions? We had some other members here too. Here, first, Representative Wilson. Then we got Randy here. And I'm trying to not confuse members of the public. We're trying to listen in here because we're jumping around to a lot of different people from the Department of Law. And that, you know, if you're not sitting in this room, that can get kind of confusing. So I want to make sure that the public can follow along. Representative Wilson, did you have another?
I asked him a question, and he asked you if he could answer it.
Well, obviously he can. Okay. He's sitting right there, Representative Mr. Bates.
Trying to follow protocol with respect, Co-Chair. The answer is yes, I will put together a list of the specific sticky points. Again, there was an April 18th letter directed to Representative Newman that articulated the top issues with the coastal districts. I do believe it is in your packet, and that will highlight generally what the issues are that remain outstanding on these issues. If that is not sufficient, let me know. Otherwise, I can do whatever you're interested in terms of a list. Okay. The piece, I will remind you, and it shouldn't, you know, it bears repeating, the piece that we're most interested in resolving initially before we engage in discussion on policies is the relationship between coastal district enforceable policies and the state and federal laws that are already out.
Representative Wilson, I believe that he's referring back last year when we heard this bill. I had asked him to put together some of the top 10 issues from districts. And so I believe that's talked to, it should be in your packet. Yeah. Thanks, Mr. Bates, on that.
Whenever it's my turn.
And then we have Guttenberg, Seaton, Edgemond, Tuck, and Johnson.
Yeah, in the years that Representative Jewell's been working on this, have you ever given him an analysis of why this bill won't work? Or any alternatives? Have you ever, when you work with Representative Jewell, about what's in this bill that you don't like, what you would like to change? I mean, we're talking about working together and coming to a mutual understanding. I'm just...
Representative Guttenberg, I'm going to have to ask you to talk just a little bit louder for some of us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry. I know I was on this committee in 03 when we changed it, when we took out the enforceable policies, when we carved out DEC. Those things were pretty significant, and I know Representative Jewell has been working on this for quite a few years. Have you ever given him a reason why this bill won't work, and what their alternatives are out there to make it work?
Representative, through the chair, we were fortunate to have Representative Jewell's attendance at one of our conferences, and we've been fortunate at other times to have his staff at our conferences when we discuss both statutory and regulatory revisions. They have, maybe not directly with Representative Jewell or Senator Olson, who's got the companion bill on the Senate side, while I may not have had specific discussions with the sponsors of those bills, their staff, representatives from the different districts that they represent, we've had discussions along these lines about the district enforceable policies, the relationship between state and federal laws. At this point, because of the substantive and significant concerns we have with the bill, we have not, as a department, engaged in revising the bill. And we didn't engage last year, and at this point, we still have significant concerns and are not prepared to engage in rewriting this bill. We want to resolve the issues, but we have to look at the legal aspects of those policies before we get into the recreation of a board or the expanded authority of policies. And if I could just further that for a moment, whether you have a coastal policy board that is made up of different representatives or the Department of Natural Resources and the commissioner presiding over these policies, we have to understand the fundamental legal basis for whether policies can infringe upon state or federal laws or not. The bodies, whether it's the commissioner or the board, are bound by law to make decisions. They can't violate the law and approve a policy that is preempted by federal law. So we have to solve that piece before we can even have the discussion on who's deciding ultimately on district plans.
Mr. Bates, the way I understand that too then is the Department of Law, along with your department and probably several others through DNR and DE's Habitat and others, are trying to figure out some of the federal implications are to this, right? Because these are federal funds that are passed through, and then the state's availability to get them to the different coastal political subdivisions without violating that federal law at the same time. And that's kind of where I think the department's trying to work, or the Department of Law is trying to get through this, but then you're dependent upon federal attorneys or implications on this too when you pose questions to them and the feedback on there. Is that kind of the hang up here, why things are taking time?
That's certainly part of it, yes.
Mr. Chair, can I have a follow up?
Representative Guttenberg, then I'd like to make sure other members get a chance.
Sure. Follows up on my previous question. On page 11, section 14, requires that the requirement for the board and board review, it says right here they can't do things that are preempted in different ways by state or federal regulation. I mean, it says it in A1, 2A, 2B, B1, B2. So I'm trying to find out, and I think some of these amendments were adopted in CNRA last year. So I'm trying to figure out if you've gotten past that point, because I'm just wondering if you're just stuck on that, even though we don't want them to do that, and Community Regional Affairs Committee has already done amendments to not allow them to do that and make it clear. I'm trying to get past that point when that is one of the sticking points, because it seems like this whole section delineates that out, that can happen.
Mr. Bates.
Guttenberg, through the chair. I might, to me, the difference is preemption versus either duplicative or overriding authority, and I think those are, I'm not an attorney and I don't practice armchair very often, but there's certainly a difference between specific federal preemption and that which simply isn't allowed by law, either overriding law, duplicating, or being more stringent. Certainly Ms. Walter online might be able to articulate that a little better. We recognize that Section 14 of House Bill 74 deals specifically with preemption. The legal question we have is much broader than that. Can a district enforceable policy, which is ultimately adopted by the state as a state policy approved by the feds, can that overwrite statutory authority that, for example, Habitat Authority, Title 16? Can a district overwrite or be more stringent than what was established in state law? It's a bigger question than just preemption that we're struggling with.
I think that's what you've tried to say several times.
I'm getting there.
In different ways. Representative, we have Seaton, Edgman, Tuck, and then Johnson. Representative Johnson, you had a question specifically on that point.
This is on that point, Mr. Chairman, if I might. All the way through here it says may adopt regulations or must adopt regulations approved by the board. That's on page 3, line 24. Page 7, line 29, after approval by the board. Page 11, line 27, regulations approved by the board. So we're asking, is there any place else in statute where we say a board can approve regulations? And it seems to me like we have the regulations are up to the department, and are we dealing with a separation of powers when we've got a branch appointed by the legislator approving regulations? I mean, and I think that kind of, to me, gets to the issue. You've got a board that can't preempt regulations that they must approve.
I'd really like to. Go ahead, Randy.
Representative Johnson, through the chair. First, I certainly believe, but I'm not experienced in other areas of boards. I'm sure that there's other boards that, Board of Game, Board of Fish, possibly. Maybe they establish regulations. This board, I think there's powers vested within this board that would give them the authority to establish regulations.
And that's the question.
Right.
Through the chair, Representative.
Yeah, and that's, that was how it was established, I believe, pre-2003, when the Coastal Policy Council was set up since the initiation of coastal management in Alaska.
And we've got quite a few questions for Randy. Randy, he lives here. I mean, he'll be back when we hear this bill again. But I would really like to have Representative Jewell be able to come up and go through the bill, you know, and that way we've got a good understanding of the bill also while we're going there, Representative Edgman.
Mr. Chairman, on that point, it makes no sense to have this in-depth discussion if the department is unwilling to change their approach. They left here April 9th last year with a mission of trying to foster some kind of a solution. I'm not hearing any solutions. All I'm hearing is absolute no until we get this issue of enforceable policies established when the Coastal Zone Management Program has been around for 25 years under the federal regime with a number of large projects that have successfully taken place. I guess I would ask, maybe rhetorically, why are we having this discussion if the department's unwilling to compromise or to come forward and provide solutions?
Well, Representative Edgman, I think that when Mayor Itta said that they would, several times through his discussion, I know I wrote down a desire to work with the state and to work with the agencies and possibly even create the Arctic Regional Citizens Advisory Council, you know, is options to try and work through some of these issues. That there's an obvious impasse there, and so I think that they're trying to do that. And like I said, Mr. Bates is here, but I'd like to get to the content of the bill also. But if you guys don't want to look at the bill here, that would be the intent of the chair if we can. I would really like to have Representative Jewell, while we've got 25 minutes left in the committee, to at least go through the bill, and maybe while he's going through the bill, he can answer a lot of these questions, Representative Edgman, or bring some more up. Mr. Bates.
Co-chair, thank you. 2 points, if I could, very quickly. Representative Edgman, as I stated, we have significant concerns with this bill, but that does not preclude, and it certainly should not represent us in terms of we don't want to work with folks. We do. We want to resolve these issues, and we are working them internally, and we're reaching out, working on them with the North Slope, with the Northwest Arctic Borough, and with all of the other coastal districts that have an interest in this issue. That is ongoing. We will continue to do that. And if I could go all the way back to coastal impact assistance and the question that Representative Tucker
briefly,
brought up.
Because I really want
very
to
briefly. The money is flowing. It is not contingent upon, I'm not sure the words you use, it is not contingent upon a rewritten coastal management program. We have coastal management in Alaska. There's about $79 million coming into the state within the next couple years because we have a coastal management program. Even the North Slope, Northwest, and a wide variety of coastal districts, they are getting a significant portion of this money. We're actively working that, and we're working closely with them to make sure this money comes in. It has no bearing on whether the North Slope, Northwest have plans. It is based on proximity to producing wells or leases, and that's it's a great opportunity for the state to engage in mitigation and additional work related to OCS activities. So
and that's explained that. Right at the top of the page where it says Section 384 of the Energy Policy Act of 2005, which establishes the Coastal Impact Assistance Program. in those funds and how they're distributed that we've just received from Ms. Hensley. But again, Mr. Bates is here. I know he's always available. I've got his phone number for individual questions here, but I would really like Representative Jewell and the staff to come through and spend some time here on the bill and go through it if we can, please.
There's no use.
For the record, Representative Reggie Jewell and Elizabeth Hensley. And Elizabeth, did you want a sectional analysis? I mean, you've got it. It's there.
Just kind of go through the questions.
Or how do you want to handle this, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, just go through the bill, or Ms. Hensley, you know, kind of highlight through the bill as we go through here. And then when we're looking at a 18-page bill. So if you can kind of just go through it, just page by page, just briefly, and give us the 20-minute version of what we're looking at here in House Bill 74.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, we'll start off with Section 1, which establishes the Alaska Coastal Policy Board, comprised of 5 public members representing coastal districts and commissioners of natural resources, fish and game, environmental conservation, and commerce, community, and economic development.
And those are, when they're selected, Ms. Hensley, with the 5 public members, and I had asked Representative Jewell about this, and he mentioned there were some of the things that you dealt with here with population or area, land, coastal land, how much coastal area is in each one of the areas.
Mr. Chairman, the 5 public members on page 1 would be appointed by the governor, and the governor would use the criteria as laid out here to make those appointments. So people from around the state would forward their names to a governor who would then, from that pool, make the appointments under this legislation.
Representative Johnson and Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Jewell, thank you. When you look at the Upper Cook Inlet area, what percentage of the population does not page 2, line 9 through 13 represent?
That'll be Section C.
Section C, yeah.
Right. Go ahead.
And I don't know if you have an exact answer, but it's well over 60-70% of the population of the state live in that Upper Cook Inlet area, municipality of Anchorage, Mat-Su Borough, Lower Cook Inlet, north of our west, wherever, 141 West Latitude.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of people up there.
So it's 70% of the state with one member on this board?
I understand where you're going with this. You're feeling like that coastal part or that part of the coastal district is unrepresented. I would be sure that if you were to extrapolate that into many other things, that would the only thing that I would bounce back to you is this: where's the resource development going to occur to provide some of the stuff? So there's a lot of ways we could look at this, Mr. Chairman, but you're right, there are a lot of people in that part of the district that how this would break down. Point well made.
Thank you. Eventually we're all Alaskans in this one together. And then I think I know I had discussions with Representative Jewell on that specific point, and he is aware of that concern, and he's looking at some options on that one while we are looking at that. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Hensley, as you go through the sectional, will you tell us we everybody has said that the other coastal management policy that we had before 2003 worked well. So can you tell me, as you go through this, this is a change we're making from the old coastal management. So I know we kind of know what's changing since 2003, but since before that it was working good, I kind of would like to know how it's different from that one.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, if I may, yes, Representative Wilson, this is a really big, complex program, and I've done my homework as much as I can, so I will do that as well as I can. And I know there are, even in this room, some people who've got 20-plus years of experience with the program who could probably clarify or answer if I don't know.
And Representative Jewell, we do have Tom Lohman from the North Slope Borough. Would it be good for him to come up also to answer questions, do you think?
That would be great. Now, okay. I'll take this chair.
Well, we can pull up. We can pull up another one. Maybe Representative Jewell by your staff.
Hello, Mr. Lohman.
I don't want to dismiss you.
I'll be right here.
Okay. I want to make sure that you're available, or don't feel shorted. Mr. Lohman, can you answer Representative Wilson's question?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Tom Lohman. I'm with the North Slope Borough. Been with the borough since 1987, when I had a full head of hair. And I've been with the program since then. Our North Slope plan was first adopted in May of 1988. So I've been around this quite a while. I probably could have answered Randy's questions almost exactly as Randy answered them. I would love to get Randy and I up here and have you guys listen to us talk. Yeah. That might get to the kernel quicker. Your question again, please. I'm sorry.
Well, because I'm not familiar with it, and I have to make a decision, I kind of would like to know, because we've heard comments that the way it was before 2003, it worked well. And so I'm wondering what this bill changes from the way it was before.
Great. Through the chair, Representative Wilson. To be honest, it didn't work well pre-2003, depending on where you want to focus. The problems with the program that existed in 2003 were solved before 191. The problems with the program largely had to do with third-party involvement and consistency reviews, which did acknowledge delay projects. That was solved by the legislature, and 191 was essentially passed because there was a certain momentum, a sense that there was a problem with the program that really didn't exist anymore at that point. This bill does not significantly change. It doesn't roll all the way back to pre-191, pre-2003. There are some things that are different. I acknowledge there were problems with the previous Coastal Policy Council, not the least of which was the size of it. 17 members was unwieldy. It was difficult to get a quorum. The requirement was that the public members be elected officials from regions around the state. That was a problem because you didn't necessarily have elected officials with knowledge of the program. The way this is worded, the way that Representative Jewell has crafted this, it puts people in a position with knowledge. They're nominated by these regions of the state. So that's a solving of a problem that existed in the program pre-2003. In terms of sort of this, what we heard from Randy, and believe me, Randy and I have gone back and forth, and I respect his ability and his knowledge of the program. But there are sort of two things going on. First, there's this overriding legal big question, whatever it is that's out there, that I really believe is a red herring. I think Representative Edgman mentioned that this program has been around for a very long time. We've sat down with OCRM, the federal agency responsible. They've had no problem either in Alaska pre-2003 or any of the other programs they administer around the country with local programs getting stricter, not in conflict with, but stricter than applicable federal laws. And again, understand what's going on here. With the board in place, you still would have to, as a district, supply scientific evidence, or in this bill, which is different. It goes beyond scientific evidence. It allows local knowledge and other databases to be brought in to show scientifically that you want to do something stricter. Randy raised an example, which we'll yield on. I don't know if that was the borough or the Northwest Arctic borough, but in that case of 125 decibels, and you know, that's a highly scientific question having to do with impacts on marine mammals. We'll yield on that. As our mayor said at the outset, we're willing to work with DNR. The example that comes up at all the meetings we've had with the state is this issue of, for instance, tank farm regulation, where in one size fits all around the state, there are requirements for lining and diking of tanks. At a local level, if you have knowledge that in your specific area, for instance, weather and rainfall and snowfall conditions require that you do something more than that, you have a higher percentage of lining and diking requirement in case there's a failure of a tank, you need to be able to go to the board, in this case, you know, DNR or the board, doesn't matter, I agree with Randy, to show that your special conditions require that you get stricter. You're not in conflict with, you're stricter for reasons that you have to prove to this third-party board. So that's all anybody's asking for, and that's all this bill accomplishes. The issue of usurping state authority or usurping federal authority, to me, really is a red herring. And the issue of local districts having the ability to craft local policies that reflect local concerns is in keeping with what every governor of Alaska has said since statehood, that they are opposed to federal intrusion into what goes on in our state, because we don't want remote decision makers to impose their will on us. It's the same around a state as large and diverse as Alaska. There are reasons at a local level to express your views through local enforceable policies that, in the case of the oil industry on the North Slope, solved problems rather than caused them. And again, Mayor Itta very eloquently talked about we being a development-oriented borough, showing the pattern of development since the plan was approved in 77. All we do is send the signal to the developer, to the applicant, here's what we expect of you. And they come and talk to us way before they submit permits. So there's no way to give a short answer at this point, but this bill doesn't roll it back completely to pre-2003 because there were problems with 2003. It rolls it back to at the district enforceable policy level, giving us some influence. But then it also, as a side matter, corrects some problems that existed with the program pre-2003.
Thank you.
Representative Tuck and Representative Jewell, you're more than welcome to participate at the front desk.
Thank you.
Okay.
I'm good.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, the Coastal Policy Council that was prior to 2003, were there any fundamental legal problems with that, or let me ask you this, I'm sorry, let me rephrase my question. With the new bill before us, what changes does this bill do that now makes it a legal problem that the Coastal Policy Council wasn't a problem?
Thank you, Representative Tuck, through the chair. I don't see any legal problem with it. And again, Lindsay Walter, who I hope is still on the phone, mentioned that there was her department was involved, I think was the phrase Lindsay used. There's an Attorney General request. There was a letter written, I think, by Randy to the up through his commissioner to the AG's office, looking for an opinion on this months ago. We still don't have an answer to that. As Lindsay said again, this issue, which we didn't hear until December of 2008, we didn't hear any question about the ability of either an independent board, whether it be Coastal Policy Board or this board, to approve regulations or approve local adopted policies. We never heard that under the old program. And the North Slope Borough had 30-something local policies pre-2003. We applied for 41 under this program, got five. None of them went through unamended. So we never saw any legal problem with a board approving the district policies and the regs for the overall program. And again, it's important to acknowledge, getting back to Representative Wilson's question, the Coastal Policy Council pre-2003 had an involvement through a petition process in individual reviews. And that was messy. I don't see a legal problem with it, but it became messy, again, because you had a lot of members who didn't have familiarity with the program, didn't have familiarity with broader regions of the state. You had individual elected officials. This new board would not get involved in individual consistency reviews at all. So I think any perceived problem with the old board has been solved. I don't believe there's a legal problem in either case.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Hello? Okay, and then Ms. Hensley, can you kind of go through the bill a little bit more? We've got questions from Representative Seaton while we've got Mr. Lohman here.
I had a question too, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Representative Seaton and Representative Edgman. And Mr. Lohman, you're from the North Slope, huh?
I live in Anchorage now. I was on the North Slope for about 9 years.
Okay.
I've been with the borough since 87.
Okay, I just want to make sure that as we go through this too, that you're going to be available either by the phone or in
Certainly.
Public then. Okay, thank you. Representative Seaton.
Thank you. Mr. Lohman, or maybe for Mrs. Walters, she may be able to answer the question more. So I was hearing from Mr. Bates that there was a problem with the state superseding federal law. I mean, I think that's settled, isn't it, that there's not a question of state law or state regulations superseding federal law. And if the state, through our statutes, designates the district policy, just like a commission or a board that's writing regulations, gives them the authority to do that, is there some other thing that in this particular area that the Department of Law is saying that the state, the legislature by statute, does not have the authority to give a district the ability to write regulations?
I think that was more towards Ms. Walter, and she's always going to be available from the Department of Law to try and answer that, Representative Seaton, but I'm trying to make sure we take advantage of Tom's time here, too. But I guess, Ms. Walter, if you can try and address that quickly. Or
Sure. Thank you for the question. Through the chair, this is, I guess, I'd like to give a brief example of, I think, maybe what could illustrate this a little bit better for us. This example that Mr. Lohman brought up was talking about lining or capacity of tank farms. The state legislator has given specific authority to DEC to regulate this particular thing. DEC has gone through a public process to create regulations that address these issues of tank lining, tank capacity, that sort of thing. So now if you're trying to say that districts can come along and be come along and have something a little different than what DEC has already regulated, this is just a scenario where then you're not going through the normal public process that regs go through. And there's also a concern of between districts, you could have very different standards. And without going through a public process like regs are gone through, project applicants don't really have any say in why they might not agree that those more stringent, they're sort of like regulations, enforceable policies do become state law or are enforced as state law. So there's no input as to why maybe those shouldn't be as stringent as a district might want them to be. And it does raise questions about, you know, okay, say a project's going on in the North Slope Borough and maybe it overlaps into the Northwest Arts Borough. If they've got two different standards, the applicant's going to have to comply with two different standards rather than the one DEC set. So this is more of, I think this is something that it's important for the legislature to figure out. If authority has been given to a state agency to regulate something specifically, how far do you want to go with enforceable policies on a district-by-district basis? How far can they go on a state level? And as we've mentioned before, on a federal level, there have been some issues where eventually all these program changes that go through, if there's changes to the statutes, changes to the regulations, these all have to go through the federal oversight body, and they have to be okayed by them. And I think Mr. Lohman said on that particular issue they'd be willing to yield because the Marine Mammal Protection Act does preempt us. So I think that's a pretty clear example of something that would not be allowed on the enforceable policy level. But this, I just want to clarify, this is something that has to be approved by the federal government, and there have been specific issues we've addressed with them, asking them, would this be something that would be approvable or not? And they've really, you know, a lot of these examples said, no, this would not be something that's approved. So even if it goes through on a state level, we do have some problems getting it approved as part of the state program by the federal program.
Ms. Hensley?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think her point about duplication and all that is addressed in Section 14 again, where it says that enforceable policies of the district coastal management plan will only be approvable if they do not duplicate, restate, or incorporate by reference state or federal statutes or regulations. Now, that section of this law is not new. It was simply moved from 4640030, so a couple sections before. That's still there, the same as what it was before. The only thing that we've added here is we've just basically stated the preemption standard, because it's something that legal minds understand kind of the world over, because you learn that in law school. And so we've just stated that there. So I think, thank you. That's all I've got to answer on that one.
Yeah.
Just to clarify, I'm not actually talking about the duplicating language. I'm talking about when enforceable policies are trying to be more stringent than state or federal law or more specific.
And we can get into that. And Ms. Hensley, we've got 5 minutes. Can we just kind of go through just a little bit more of the bill here?
Oh, yes, of course, Mr. Chairman.
The direction of the bill.
Yes, Section 2 of the bill clarifies that the Department of Natural Resources will render all federal consistency determinations, and then each state consistency determination when a project requires a permit or from the department or from two or more state resource agencies. That's significant in that, to address Representative Wilson's concern, that wasn't the case before. The policy board before was the one that would make the consistency determinations. And so here, DNR retains that power which is very significant.
So thanks. Thank you for all you're going through this, and I know you're pretty knowledgeable about this, and you've heard a lot of the questions. So as you go through this, thank you for pointing things out like that as you go through. I think that will just kind of assist the committee.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to squeeze in one question before we adjourn today, and I'll try to be a little more diplomatic this time around, but we have a legal issue. It's been a year later. We can't resolve the legal issue. For whatever unknown reason, that's the 800-pound gorilla in the room on this whole subject. We could go through this bill ad nauseum and all the details, but if we can't get past that legal issue, this whole discussion is academic. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to have the Attorney General come in and address the committee on this legal issue so we can get some kind of a clarity on this issue before we move forward. I think Mr. Bates himself has attempted, the department it appears, but there has not been any resolution of the legal question.
I understand, Representative Edgman, and we can certainly ask the Attorney General to come, you know, to the next hearing. But, you know, it's certainly important, too, that to get an idea of what the bill is and what it does. And that's what I would like Ms. Medley to try and get through here. I mean, we've got a bill in front of us. Let's get an understanding of what that is, and then we can always try and get the Attorney General here. Ms. Hensley.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Section 3, establishes authority for the department to adopt regulations after approval by the board. And here, regarding this section, I can do some research for the committee, if you wish, that shows where else in the regulations a board makes the regulations. So I'll do that research for you so you're comfortable, so you may be more comfortable with that section.
Thank you.
Section 4 talks about the powers of the board, including the ability to accept grants and take reasonable action to carry out the intent of the program. Section 5 looks at the duties of the board to approve the ACMP standards and the criteria for district plan approval. It's on page 4. Section 6 defines the board. Section 7 provides for approval of ACMP program changes by the board. Not a whole lot is new there. Kind of a lot of single word changes from board or from department to board. Section 8 looks at objectives. And you'll notice that the second objective, which remains the same, is the development of industrial or commercial enterprises. So the ACMP is not an anti-development program. In fact, it's intended to promote development. But it does add subsistence down at number 5 on page 6, line 9. It adds the word subsistence to resources included in the ACMP objectives.
So would that give the board the ability to manage game?
Chairman, I don't believe so. And in fact, I think this little change is it's just stating what's already there. The federal law includes subsistence as one of the resources that can be managed. And so, and coastal districts already to date have authority to create enforceable policies that address subsistence. So it's just kind of a more of a technical change that's reflecting that, so that it's clear what is covered.
When we come back, I'd like maybe a little bit more discussion on that when we come back.
Okay, great. Section 9. This one is a little bit more substantial in that it removes the requirement for district enforceable policies to meet statewide standards. The statewide standards criteria was a little bit confusing, and so here it just has that the district plan criteria must be met.
And Ms. Hensley, we're out of time here, but I want to respect the next committees and people's movement around through the community. Is there sections in here that you feel, or maybe even Representative Jewell might be a good question for you, that we should look at or that make substantial changes on particular sections that we have?
Mr. Chairman, I think the most substantial changes that are made here in this bill are the creation of the Alaska Coastal Management Board and the DEC, how did she put it, the reuniting of the DEC with the program. Those are, I believe, the most substantial changes here. And the fact, I will emphasize that the board does not conduct the review process of projects, that remains with the Department of Natural Resources.
Thank you. Come on up, Reggie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know you're going to adjourn here momentarily, and I just want to say some things. I think there was some, there's a couple of issues that were pointed out, I think, during the process of the hearing, and I appreciate another hearing. One was that there are two areas of the state that still have not had their policies taken care of. They were unresolved. And, you know, a focus may be, that's maybe where we should put a focus of this bill. And, you know, that being the North Slope and the Northwest Arctic. And before you adjourn, Mr. Chairman, this is, I think, about the fourth year that we've had this bill out here somewhere in one form or another. And we've heard the Department of Natural Resources being in opposition of the bill. And there was even a time when the Department of Natural Resources said that they were going to introduce their own bill. I wish that kind of guidance would materialize in form of legislation, proposed legislation, or even joining us in our office to try and hammer some of this stuff out, and would extend some of that. And I have met with, on several occasions, with the commissioner. I've gone to the symposiums that DNR has had, but nothing's materializing. And as you've heard from many of the districts, there's still a lot of unresolved issues, whether their policies have been accepted or not. So, in the end, I appreciate your taking the time to hold this hearing and look forward to potentially even another as we wind down with 20 some days left to go. I just want to remind you of a statement that was made a little bit earlier by the mayor.
Mayor Ida?
North Slope Borough Mayor. And that was, he's got to support something. And in the absence of the state taking any action, I'm not sure exactly what options that leaves. And so with that, I know you probably want to adjourn this, but I thank you for accommodating the hearing, and I'm not sure where we go from here.
Thank you, Representative Jewell, and you and I have talked on this and tried to get with the commissioner of DNR on this one and the mayor, and we tried, I know, several attempts to bring us all together and look at this, and I will continue to do my best to bring parties together on that. And with that, I think we will adjourn for the day. Thank you.